Welcome to We The Podcast, the show about how the people outside of the billionaire and millionaire class, you know, most of us, engage the economy. Let's be honest, everybody. Few people enjoy paying taxes. That goes for me, too. But most of us understand that taxes serve a critical purpose, the public good. We're talking about things like Social Security, to take care of our seniors, people on disability, survivor benefits. We're talking about roads, bridges, transit systems, our electrical grid. You know, we're talking about unemployment insurance to protect us and our families if we lose our jobs, and our educational system to teach the next generation and provide them with greater opportunities. And since we all benefit from these things, you'd figure that everybody would contribute, everybody who could anyway. Unfortunately, that's not the case. Some people and corporations spend a lot of time not paying, and that's called tax avoidance. One popular corporate tax avoidance scheme is offshoring, which means some of America's wealthiest people and corporations routinely move their money overseas to avoid paying taxes. These powerful interests have rigged the tax code to limit the amount that they pay and increase the amount working families pay, both in taxes and in a lack of services. Check this out. According to a recent report by Oxfam, the top 50 American companies hold $1.4 trillion, trillion with a T, overseas to avoid paying taxes. These are called tax havens, and the worst offender by far is Apple. Hey, look, I love my iPhone, and you might catch me working with my iPad too. We all love these products. But by holding nearly $200 billion in profits overseas, Apple avoids paying its fair share in contributing towards our country. That's not right. To get a better understanding of tax havens, I talked with Frank Clemente, who is the executive director of Americans for Tax Fairness, an organization working for a tax system where big corporations and the wealthy pay what they owe. So, Frank Clemente, what is a tax haven?
Oh, tax haven, it's typically a relatively small country, often a tropical country like Bermuda or the Cayman Islands, but Luxembourg is a tax haven. That's kind of a small country right in the heart of Europe, and even Ireland is considered a tax haven, and Switzerland's considered a tax haven. What is the way to think about a tax haven is they're very secretive. They aren't transparent, so you can't learn very much information about how they're income that's being generated there or being stashed there, and what kind of taxes are being paid on that income. They have secret banking laws typically that keep prying eyes, keep government eyes away. They are typically have a very low tax rate on profits or income that's stashed there. It can be as high as Ireland, which is a 12% tax rate, but it can be, you know, 0 or 1% in a lot of these places. And tax havens are countries that are not just used by corporations, they're used by wealthy individuals, and they're also used by the underworld, by, you know, oligarchs from Russia or dictators from African countries who are essentially removing money from their countries, removing assets from their countries, typically illegally, and they are needing a place to stash them, to hide them where the authorities can't get after them, where they avoid taxes and where they avoid the scrutiny of the police who may be trying to find those assets.
So tax havens, do they serve any legitimate function, or are they basically just siphon money away from the citizens of a given country.
They do serve a legitimate function for some businesses. I don't know that they do for individuals so much, but you know, a lot of companies are in, it's a competitive world out there. They're competing with other businesses. They're competing, you know, with respect to other businesses in other countries, and they sometimes like to keep things under wraps so that their competitors can't learn about what they might be doing, won't learn about a certain amount of profits they might be generating or where they might be generating those profits. So there are legitimate reasons for tax havens, for the use of tax havens. But most of the time, and especially when it comes to U.S. multinational corporations and U.S. taxpayers, it's a way to either hide income from U.S. tax authorities, or it's a way to shift income out of America, profits that are being generated here in America, and to shift them to tax havens where they're taxed at only a fraction of what they would be taxed at if they were here in America, if they were being seen as being generated here in America. Profits for a lot of these companies are being generated here in America, but they're being shifted offshore into these tax havens. And by doing that, they increase what they claim is being made here in terms of profits in America, which has a tax rate that's, you know, a tax rate we need to sustain our economy and to sustain our communities, but it'll be shifted to these tax havens where they do not have to pay taxes or they pay very little in taxes.
So the Panama Papers hit the news back in the springtime in April. You know, that's pretty close. Is that a tax haven, and how does it impact us here in the United States, if at all?
Panama is a huge tax haven. It's, you know, they've got a big business down there that's used to help people set up corporations. And they don't just set up corporations within Panama. They can be setting up corporations around the world in tax havens around the world. The Mossack Fonseca law firm that was the center of the Panama Papers, from where all the documents were released, they were expert at setting up you know, what we call shell corporations. These are companies that aren't really companies. They're companies on paper only. You often can't even determine who the owner of those companies is. They don't have boards. They don't. They often will not identify the actual owner. They'll have shell owners. And they create a deep layer often, so that it's very hard to determine whose money is in this account. But the Panama Papers was what it revealed was this vast network around the world of tax havens, and how a company in Panama operates to set up accounts and fake corporations, shell corporations around the world on behalf of wealthy donors and corporations. That the Panama Papers is a little bit more related in some ways to what I would call illicit activities.
Okay.
You know, criminal activities in some cases, but some of it's not. But there's just a lot of tax havens are like Cayman Islands and Bermuda are being used by rich people and corporations just to you know. It's still all about tax avoidance. It just may not be as illegal as a lot of the stuff that was revealed in the Panama Papers.
I'm curious to know, how do tax havens affect working Americans, working people, maybe even around the world? If companies and individuals have to pay taxes, and if those people are putting them in a tax haven, are they not helping to pay the expenses associated with running society, with schools, with roads, with clean water? Is this money that would go to improve society and support public services, but for tax havens?
Yes. I mean, we are losing trillions of dollars in revenue that could be collected if the corporations and rich people were not able to use tax havens to shield their income from taxation. We all live in communities. Some communities are doing well, some communities are struggling, but it's the local taxpayers that are paying to make our communities thrive, and hopefully they're thriving, but as I said, in some cases they're struggling. Communities thrive when they have a great education system. They thrive when we're not clogged in traffic because we have money to repair our potholes or to build new roads or to build mass transit that moves a lot of people. Communities thrive when we have a society that has the resources to create new, to invest in research and development for new medical cures or to find, you know, clean energy sources. And all of that requires everybody paying their fair share to help finance those investments that benefit everybody. They create jobs. They make our standard of living, our quality of life much better. They reduce the class size. They ensure that we have more police on the street to keep things safe. So we're losing large amounts of money every year to tax havens, and we've got to close them down. We've got to shut down the ability of companies and individuals to use these tax havens in order to generate the kind of revenue we need here in America to make our communities great.
So why are they allowed to exist? I mean, if they don't benefit society, if they allow people who have taxable income to avoid paying taxes, why are they around?
Well, you know, money talks.
Right.
And this goes to the heart of why does Congress and why does Washington and why, I mean, special interests carry a huge amount of sway here in Washington, as you know. There's a lot of good changes that could be made, but it's but for the amount of money that's spent on corporate lobbyists and the amount of money that's spent on campaign contributions to keep the status quo. We have a big battle that's brewing right now in Congress directly about tax havens, and that is corporations have $2.4 trillion in profits that are stashed offshore, and they do not have to pay any tax on that money until they bring it back home. What that means is we have figured that that $2.4 trillion, if they were required to bring it back, in other words, if Congress passed a law and said, you guys have to bring that money back, you can't keep it offshore any longer, then you would owe $700 billion on that money. $700 billion is about as much money as we had to help finance us getting out of the Great Recession when we did the big stimulus program that kept our head above water during that terrible Great Recession. So it's a lot of money that's sitting offshore right now that if Congress passed a law that said required them to bring it back and pay the full tax that they owe on the money, it'd be a huge pool of revenue to you know, create thriving communities. You know, we're not able to do that right now because political power.
Well, you know, an interesting thing about that is that instead of just passing a law saying bring the money back, what has traction in Congress are ideas that say, well, if you bring the money back, we'll lower the rates of tax in the United States and let you keep some of it. We'll let you basically keep some of the money that you never were supposed to keep, as an inducement to try to get you to bring some of it back. You familiar with what I'm talking about?
Yeah, absolutely. Irritates me, and I'll tell you why it irritates me. And I understand this is about legislative compromise. This is about corporations have a huge amount of power in Washington, Congressman, as you know. And basically, what they're saying to Congress is, we'll only agree to legislation that taxes these offshore profits if you give us a huge discount on what we owe. Now, can you imagine if every taxpayer said, well, we're not going to pay our full tax bill. We'll only pay a third or a quarter of what we owe. That's essentially what they're saying, that we're not going to pay the full amount we owe you. We're only going to pay you maybe a third of what we owe you. Take it or leave it. That's the dilemma we face.
Yeah, and I don't know. I mean, it just seems like another privilege that for people who already have many privileges.
Well, and what to understand is these are the worst tax-dodging corporations there are, the multinational corporations that have all of this money offshore. They have it offshore because they're not paying any taxes on it at this point in time, or they're paying a very little bit. Let me give you two companies to illustrate what I'm talking about. Apple, the biggest corporation in America by revenue and profit, a company all of us love for the products that they produce. They have $200 billion offshore in profits that they have not paid any U.S. taxes on. And they keep accumulating probably about $50 billion or more each year. Now, they owe, they actually have told the Securities and Exchange Commission how much money they owe on that, those profits, and it's $61 billion is how much they owe. And we also are able to determine how much they're paying foreign countries on those profits. It's only 5%. Now, the U.S. corporate tax rate is 35%. So they owe 35%, but they're only paying 5% to foreign governments. If they were to bring that money back, they would get credit for that 5% that owe us 30% on a dollar. So they owe us about $61 billion. There, Tim Cook just the other day had a big interview in the media, and he said, we're not going to bring that money back until we get a fair tax rate. I beg your pardon? You're operating under the system now. Your fair tax rate is 35%. You can't dictate to us what tax rate you ought to pay. And that's where we're at. Congress has to stand up and say, no, Apple, no, the rest of you, you're going to pay what you owe.
Yeah.
That's the bottom line. You should be paying what you owe. The small business person that's on the main street in Minneapolis,
yeah,
or across the country, they're paying what they owe.
Mm-hmm.
Every year. So why should the multinational be able to pay what it, not pay what it owes?
Well, Frank, let me ask you this. Do tax cuts at home in the United States, do they persuade corporate interests to ease up on tax avoidance? Sometimes you'll hear them say, well, if you reduced our taxes or gave us a discount, we wouldn't try to avoid taxes so much. Is there any evidence to support such a claim as that?
Well, you have to distinguish between two things. One is, do corporations want to stay in America is the first question. Mm. And I would say absolutely most of them do want to stay here in America. The taxes are, from a business point of view, they are not the primary driver for why a business locates where it locates. Mm-hmm. The primary driver is, can they get the high-quality workers that they need in order for that corporation to do well? Is it close to its markets? Is the business climate in general really – is there a great educational system for the children of the workers? Is there a good infrastructure for people to get to work? Is the legal system good, where it's going to protect my drug patents or my high tech, my patents on my intellectual property? And all of those things are relatively strong here in America. Taxes, if you ask a corporation where it ranks in terms of their business decisions, it's probably fourth or fifth in terms of what's most important. Lastly, is quality of life, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, America has a great quality of life, and you want to keep it that way. And the way to keep it that way is to pay your taxes. So taxes, in terms of business decisions, ranks much lower. Now, the problem is we've actually got a tax system, though, that makes it very easy for them to be able to game the system and therefore, you know, save money. So we're not even testing out the proposition about, well, if we had them pay the full rate, would it affect how they feel about staying in America or not? I believe it would not. It's a relatively minor reason for them to leave America is taxes. The bigger reason for them to leave America is if they can get cheaper labor and just avoid a whole lot more costs. Taxes are a much smaller portion of a corporation's costs than the inputs, right? The raw materials, the labor, all that sort of stuff.
And while we're on the subject, I mean, what has happened to U.S. corporate tax rates over the last 30, 40 years?
Well, the tax rate of U.S. corporations is about what it's been for the last 30 or 40 years. That hasn't changed. It actually went down. It went up 1 percentage point in the last 30, 40 years. What has changed is how much money corporations are contributing to the American society at the federal level. They used to contribute about a third of the federal revenue that came in used to come from corporations. So one out of every $3 used to come from the corporate tax. Now it's down to one out of every $10
wow.
is being contributed by corporations. So their tax, the amount that they're paying in taxes has dropped dramatically. At the same time, their profits are way up. So they should be paying a lot more because their profits are way up. But it's because of all the loopholes, the special interest carve-outs and things like that, that they've been able to reduce their effective tax rate. As you said, the rate by law the corporations should pay is 35%, but the rate that many of them pay is down in the teens, and the reason it's so low is because of the loopholes that they're able to take advantage of, the biggest one being that they don't have to pay any taxes on the profits they're making offshore. I think what's an important part of this debate for your listeners to think about is the companies that generate the most amount of money offshore or make it look like they're generating the most amount of money offshore, they're the biggest tax dodgers. What that means is that companies that are more domestic in nature, that don't have, you know, they're not multinational, they don't have these markets overseas, and that's mostly your smaller businesses and some of your domestic firms, they are paying a 35% rate or a 30% rate. So they're carrying the companies like Apple and Google and General Electric and Microsoft and Pfizer, the drug company, and all these other drug companies, because those companies, the big multinationals, they're able to what we call shift their profits offshore. They're being generated, a lot of those profits are being generated here in America because the patent is here, or the researchers are here, or the sales force is here, and the market is here, and often it's Medicaid and Medicare and things like that, that's the market. But they're able to shift be through loopholes to make it look like the profits are not being generated in America, they're being generated offshore. And I'll give you here's an example, and it's in a report that we just put out. It's a company called Gilead Sciences. It's based in California. They created the first cure for hepatitis C. Mm. And hepatitis C affects 3 million Americans, and it severely damages your liver, and it kills a lot of people. So this is a life-saving cure that they developed, with government help, by the way. The report shows they have a patent on this, on the key ingredient that's an U.S. patent, but they shifted the registration of that patent to Ireland in 2013, and that's when they began manufacturing this cure. The profits went from $4 billion a year to $22 billion a year between 2013 and 2015, and virtually all of their profits are now showing up as being profits in tax havens offshore, not here in America, even though the vast majority of the company's sales are taking place here in America. And the reason they can do that is because they registered their patent. They essentially sold their patent to their Irish subsidiary. And so now the Irish subsidiary is charging the American manufacturer an arm and a leg to for the use of the patent that was the use of the drug that was developed here in America. So the profits are now showing up in Ireland, where they're paying virtually no tax. They're paying a 1% tax in Ireland, rather than what they should be paying here in America. So they have actually admitted that if they were to bring their money home, they owe they have $30 billion offshore. They owe $10 billion on that money. They've admitted this, but they continue to do this because of this loophole.
So let me ask you, Frank, what should we do here? I mean, we have this situation where there are these tax havens. Companies are using them. High net worth, rich individuals are using them to avoid paying taxes in the United States. And I suppose this is happening throughout the world. I mean, rich oligarchs in Russia or some dictator in Latin America, Africa, or Asia, I'm supposing that they use these tax havens to deprive the taxpayers of their countries of resources as well. I mean, what should we do? What should the world do about these tax havens? They don't appear to be in our interest or the interest of the average person.
Well, the most important thing that we can do, and think we're losing about $130 billion a year from this tax loophole that's called deferral. And deferral is it's the loophole that basically says whatever profits you're making offshore or making it look like you're making offshore, you don't have to pay any taxes on those profits until you bring them back home to America. Now, that's why all this $2.4 trillion is sitting offshore. If Congress needs to pass legislation that says that wipes out that loophole, and it basically says if you make profits this year, no matter where you make them, here in America, or you're making them offshore, doesn't matter. You can't defer taxes on them. You got to pay taxes now. If you did that, if you just wiped out that loophole, there would be no incentive for them to keep this money offshore. They would, they'd still have to pay taxes on it, whether it's in Ireland or Luxembourg or the Cayman Islands or here. But you have to get rid of deferral so that they have to pay the U.S. tax rate on the money, not the tax rate in the Cayman Islands, which is like zero. And so if you wipe out this deferral loophole, basically they have no incentive to put this money offshore, and they would have to start paying taxes on it. So that's the first thing for what I call the profits going forward, the money that's going to be generated in the future under the corporate tax system. We have this immediate problem, which is the $2.4 trillion that's sitting offshore right now that they owe $700 billion on. Congress has to pass a special law for that that says you can no longer keep – you can keep that money offshore if you want, but you just have to pay taxes on it. And if you're paying taxes in France where it's a 20, 25% tax rate, you'll get credit for that, and so you'll only owe a little bit extra money here in America. But if you're paying – if you've got your money in the Cayman Islands where you're paying a 1% tax rate, you're going to have to pay the full – the 34% on top that you still owe here to America. So we've got to pass that law too. It's a requirement on the money that's offshore, the profits that are offshore now, that they've got to – we're calling it the pay what you owe tax. And we're working with folks, I hope to work with you, and we're working with some senators who are gearing up to put legislation in about this, because this is going to be the key debate in 2017. This is what's driving the corporate tax reform debate, is get them, the corporations that want to get access to the money that's offshore. They actually have access to the money. Let me make it clear. They can bring they have access to this money in the sense that they can use it in a lot of different ways. They can invest it in other companies. They can invest it in U.S. Treasury bonds. They can invest it in other corporate paper. They just can't bring it back to their own corporation. If they brought it back to their own corporation, that's what triggers the tax.
So profits are up. The corporate contribution to financing America is down. And offshore money is up, and tax havens are all over the place. What do you see going forward, man? How do we get people to care enough to drive a movement for real accountability here?
Well, I think the first thing is for folks to understand that how it affects them, which is what you asked, at the beginning. And the way to think about it is here's a way to think about it. Apple alone owes $61 billion on its money that's offshore. For $61 billion, we can fund President Obama's college free tuition plan for a community college. His plan costs $60 billion for 10 years, serving 9 million students, and they would get free tuition at community colleges across the country. So this one company, Apple, could fund that program for 10 years.
Wait a minute, Frank. And wouldn't those kids conceivably be studying computer science, which
yes.
eventually might benefit Apple?
That's true. Yeah.
Okay. Just asking.
Just that one company. So what people first have to do, I think, is see that they actually do have a stake in this, that this isn't just abstract. People care about – Americans are huge about fairness, right? We all care about fairness, what's right and wrong. So they care – the polling shows people care about the tax issue from just a straight-up fairness point of view. The corporations should pay their fair share and the wealthy should pay their fair share. But we all have a stake in this, a self-interest in this as well, which is, you know, if we're going to have strong communities, thriving communities, communities that succeed more, that have better jobs, better paying jobs, et cetera, we've got to generate more revenue to do that. And the place to generate that, we have two choices. You can whack away at the programs and services that everybody depends on, whether it's education or public safety or, you know, a clean environment or building our roads and bridges. You can whack away at that stuff, and our quality of life will deteriorate. Our communities will be less safe and worse off. Or we can make corporations and the wealthy pay their fair share by closing these loopholes. But that's going to require a citizenry that is politically active and that is placing this demand on politicians running for elected office. I mean, we have to have people out there running for Congress, president, on down, who are saying that I'm going to change priorities. I'm on your side. I'm not on the side of the special interests that are keeping the tax system tilted the way it is. I like to say that the tax system to me is the poster child of what people don't like about Washington, right? We have a tremendous amount of anger out there at Washington, people feeling like the system's rigged. It's not working for them, but it's working for the rich and corporations. The number one way in which that's true is with respect to the tax system and how tilted it is in favor of the rich and corporations.
You know, Frank, we talk about international trade agreements all the time. They're often a conversation point across America and in Washington. How come we can't have an international agreement where all the nations of the world just agree we're not going to have any of these tax havens, and that the people of the world who work hard and pay taxes are going to be able to benefit from the tax revenue that they generate to benefit their own societies, and nobody's going to be able to be a freeloader or free rider by benefiting from the society but not paying taxes in it or paying lower taxes? How come we can't get some sort of an international agreement like that?
Well, it's a great question, and some of it is countries playing one country off another country, right? For Switzerland or for Ireland, it's a huge advantage to be able to operate this way. I mean, Ireland has become the place for U.S. corporations to go because they've created these special tax deals with U.S. corporations where they can set up shop, they can incorporate there, they don't have to have a lot of employees. But they can run a lot of their profits through Ireland and pay a very low tax rate. So part of it is getting governments to cooperate with each other. And it's hard to do that when you have governments that are, you know, winning out and screwing other countries. So that's the first thing. There's been a big effort right now just to get in, and it's through the what's called the OECD. It's kind of the 33 biggest countries in the world. It's an economic cooperation consortium. They finally they're trying to get all together just on having some standard for reporting and disclosure of profits offshore, of taxes that are being paid by countries, so that we know what revenue is being generated in every country by a particular corporation, how many employees they have there, how big a footprint they have in terms of plant and equipment and that sort of thing, how much they're paying in taxes, so that we can basically see what kind of shady things are going on. And that's sort of like the first basis. It's taken several years just to get agreement on that.
Well, let me wrap up by asking just a few more questions. One is, do countries that have that are tax havens, do the average people in that country benefit from those tax havens? I mean, I know there's a lot of poverty in Panama. I mean, I guess my question is, you might have a country that is a tax haven, but is it really only the elites of that country that benefit from it? Or does it actually help generate real shared economic benefits for that nation?
Well, the way to think about it is the business of the tax haven generates tax revenue for that country, and it trickles down. But it's not like the money is being invested in that country. So, you know, say a Russian oligarch puts $1 billion in a Cayman Islands bank account. That $1 billion is not being spent to invest in that country. But the process of doing that, the process of setting up the accounts, the travel that goes to that country, the law firms that are hired there, they all generate a certain amount of income, right? A certain amount of money gets exchanged, and it's at the elite level. But those elites then go to restaurants and they buy fancy homes there and that sort of thing. So some of it does trickle down, but it's not like it's money. It's like trickle down money here.
Right.
You know, when the rich get a tax cut in America, that's trickle down money here too. That's different than saying, okay, we're going to collect the money and we're going to actually spend $500 billion to rebuild roads and bridges, and that's going to employ, you know, millions of people. So, no, you don't get that kind of investment from the money that's being put in those bank accounts. It's simply the elite structure that's doing the business of those tax havens. It's the money's trickling down to folks at the bottom.
Well, Frank Lemini, thanks a lot for helping us understand tax havens and so many other issues. We're going to keep on working hard here on We the Podcast, and I just want to say thank you for spending a little time with us to help us understand something that's in the news, but not that easy to understand.
Thank you, Keith.
The reason we should all contribute and pay our fair share is because we're all invested in this country. Taxes support clean air, clean water, a patent system so entrepreneurs can profit from their inventions and innovations, a judicial system to hold people and firms accountable and to resolve disputes in a fair, civilized way, a transportation system that serves people and moves goods. Wealthy Americans and big corporations should pay what they owe. Everyone should. After all, it's because of these investments that we are able to benefit today. Thankfully, there are people out there like Frank Lemente who track tax avoidance. He offers a better way to improve our education system, our roads and bridges and transit systems, and our investments in working families. It's an important fight and one that we should all be involved in. For this episode of We the Podcast, this is Keith Ellison, and I'll see you next time. Do me a favor, everybody. Head on over to We the Podcast page at iTunes and rate, review, and subscribe. This episode of We the Podcast was produced by Carol Wayman, Maria Lavadier, and Brett Morrow.